LSU and the Raging Cajuns, more than a baseball game at the Shrine on Airline. 31 points, the defending NBA champs. Not enough. A comeback of all ages by the Clippers. And, boy, you fall asleep and you become the highest paid player in the NFL. And what's it like being between the ropes when the return of the roar of Tiger Woods takes place? All these stories and more coming your way today, Tuesday, April 16th, 2019.
Ball pop free. Mike Scott at the horn. It's in. And the Sixers punctuate a brilliant third quarter with a last-second shot by Mike Scott. The lead 116-87. And they rack up 51 points in the quarter, the most of any quarter this year.
Good year. Swing and a drive to left center and deep. Yelich just hit his third home run in this game, and it's now 10-6.
We stopped playing. We kind of disconnected, kind of mid third quarter. Lost our defensive edge. I mean, they scored 85 points in the second half. You know, we had really done a good job defensively in the first half. Kind of messed with the game a little bit. And when you do that, you know, you're in some trouble, especially in the playoffs.
Welcome. That was the voice of Steve Kerr. The Golden State Warriors up 31, 7.5 minutes to go in the third. They end up losing. Don't sleep on the Clippers. Literally. My boy, Christian Yelich, gets destroyed by my St. Louis Cardinals. I think he's got 7 home runs in 5 games against my Redbirds as the Brew Crew keeps on winning. Gee whiz. And Ben Simmons with a triple-double, and the Sixers even their series at a game apiece with the Brooklyn Nets. And with that, we say good afternoon. How are you, Acadiana? How are you, Crip Cormier, out there in the lovely village of Brobridge, listening in to all points north, south, east, and west? We welcome you. My main man, CD, back in the 237 Roof Studios on the campus of Delta Media, KLWB, and 103.7 The Game. Yours truly here, Studio 1A. It's great to be with you on another Chamber of Commerce day this Tuesday. What a gorgeous, gorgeous day. I want to grab a golf club. I want to go out there and hit the ball. That's what Tiger Woods does to me. Yes, indeed. We've got a busy show planned for you and yours. Very nice to be this guy. His name is James Aducci, a Wisconsin man who claims he never placed a bet on sports until just recently, when he risked $85,000 on Tiger Woods winning the Masters. James Aducci was presented with a check for a little over $1.2 million Monday at a sports book in Las Vegas. His win represents the largest golf payout ever for sportsbook operator William Hill US. 14-1 odds. I don't know what he thought. I don't know what he never. You know, you usually when you never bet, you go to a horse race and you bet $2, $3, $5 on a horse. Your first bet's $85,000. Holy cow. He said he had a feeling Woods would win because his children were watching him. Wow. Adducci doesn't have any children, but golf is special for him and his father, who advised him against placing the bet. He described the experience of watching the tournament as a complete roller coaster. He traveled to Vegas last Tuesday, a week ago, specifically to place the bet without even knowing the odds he would get at the sports books because operators aren't allowed to give information over the phone. Well, what's he going to do now? He says he plans on using the money to make more bets. Don't do that, Mr. Adducci. Don't do it. Walk away. You're going to lose it all. Walk away. So what was it like being on the course? Alex Myers is our Golf Digest golf analyst. He was there from beginning to end. And he will share his experiences on a truly remarkable weekend. Can't get enough of it. Can't wait till the PGA next month. Can't wait. So Alex Myers will join us. Tomorrow is the start of the national signing period for college basketball. And then later this week, coaches can hit the road and go out there and observe and get ready for the next year's class. Well, Will Wade was reinstated on Sunday as the head coach. Perfect timing, 30 minutes before the premiere of the season premiere of Game of Thrones. That was perfect timing. Anyway, we'll talk to Billy Embody, go to 247 Sports, his expertise, LSU basketball recruiting. We'll talk about some of the prospects and some of the thoughts on this LSU basketball program. Tonight, first, though, LSU baseball taking on the Raging Cajuns. It's a great rivalry. All those past days back in the day when there was some arguing going on when they used to play at the old Alec Box, that's all under the water, under the bridge. You got two coaches, two highly respected coaches, each of which respect the other's one's programs in Paul Menary and Tony Robichaud, two class acts. So this is a great, great baseball series, but it's more than just a baseball game. It is the 16th annual Wally Pontiff Jr. Classic. Wally was a terrific baseball player, taken way too early with a heart abnormality. And a foundation was set up. It provides a scholarship for an LSU baseball player, and it also gives contributions to charitable causes throughout the state. We're going to talk with Wally's father. I would imagine it's kind of like a roller coaster of a day for the Pontiffs. It brings back some great memories. It brings back some very sad memories, all wrapped and intertwined into one. But we'll go through those emotions with Wally Pontiff Sr. coming up in the program. Rick Barnes from the University of Tennessee, their head basketball coach. I don't know how I would feel if I am a Tennessee fan and Rick Barnes, in a very blatantly honest approach, said, you know what, if UCLA had paid my $5 million buyout, I'd have been the head coach at UCLA. They didn't, so I'm here at Tennessee. And I love Tennessee. But if they had bought my buyout, I'd have been gone to L.A. I don't know how I'd feel about that. I really don't. And if things weren't compounded for the Golden State Warriors in their collapse of a 31-point lead that ended up in a loss to even their series with the Clippers at a game apiece, DeMarcus Boogie Cousins, according to sources, is out with a torn left quad, season over. So the Achilles last year, season over, worked so hard to rehab it, to get ready. Midway through the season, he joins the Warriors on a one-year deal, trying to show everybody that he's fully recovered, can still play, to get that big, big, big commitment monetarily. And now this, he'll have to go back for another one-year deal somewhere in hopes to show everyone that he can still play and do his thing. Now, you know how I feel. This is no knock on Boogie Cousins, but I'd rather Andrew Bogut on the court than Boogie Cousins. I know he doesn't score like that, but Golden State's got enough scores. You got to be able to defend. You got to be able to pass. You got to be willing to screen. You got to be willing not to get the ball. So I think the Warriors will be just fine. Just fine. All right. So, Wally Ponniff Sr., Billy Embody talking basketball recruiting, Alex Myers talking the Tiger Factor at Augusta, and what does it mean for the game of golf, and is it fair to start talking about Jack and Tiger again? 15 majors, trying to get to 18 and beyond. Is it fair? We'll discuss that. That's what's on the lineup today. We'll take our first time out. We'll come back. We'll get things rolling. CD, taking us to break, hitting the tunes. So glad you're with us. This is the Tuesday edition of the Jordy Helfrich Show, the number one sports talk station in Acadiana. Is 103.7 The Game. We'll be right back.
Never play cards with a guy whose last name is Estate. Don't spit into the wind. And always get your sports talk from the Jordy Helfrich Show. Live and local. 103.7 The Game.
All right, welcome back. Again, tonight, the Shrine on Airline, LSU and the Raging Cajuns of UL Lafayette, 7 o'clock, first pitch, 6:30 pregame show right here on 103.7 The Game. And then LSU will make a quick turnaround, and Florida comes to town for Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. The Cajuns, 19-20 overall, 8-7 in the Sun Belt. They won 2 of 3 over South Alabama last weekend at the Teague. The Cajuns batting .261. They've got 40 homers, 69 steals in 96 attempts. In the all-time series, which means absolutely nothing, but we just throw numbers out there. LSU leads the series 55-26. They've won 5 of the last 7, 15 of the last 22 meetings. But last year, the Cajuns got both wins, 3-1 in the Ponniff Classic, and a 4-3 10-inning win March 7th at the Teague. So 2-0. Now, LSU is beat up. They're banged up. Paul Mainieri met with the media yesterday, gave an update on his team. Really wasn't pretty. Several pitching injuries. Things have gotten worse for Landon Marceau. He made a return to the mound for a brief start against Southern. Didn't go very well, and now his soreness has returned. Zach Hess suffered that groin injury, had to exit Friday's game in the first inning, and that had a ripple effect. Mainieri said Hess is feeling better, but no timetable on his return. Doubtful that he'll pitch this weekend. Jaden Hill, who had such a great start, the freshman phenom, he's progressing, but is still a couple of weeks from returning. So LSU's pitching staff, very thin right now. So they've got to play 4 games in the next 5 days, and that's going to really stretch what they have. Will Rapoel or Riggs Threadgill will likely be among several LSU pitchers that will make some brief appearances tonight. But that's just the beginning. That's just the tip of the iceberg, because LSU's injuries extend way beyond the pitching staff. They've got probably about 11 position players available tonight. Zach Watson, Chris Reed, 2 of your 3 best hitters. Mainieri said yesterday he's not sure if either of them will be available this weekend. Certainly not tonight. On top of that, second baseman Hal Hughes woke up yesterday with sore ribs and a sore hand after a collision Sunday with Brant Broussard. On Paul Mainieri's radio show last night, he let everybody know that Hughes will be out for at least a week. So LSU has only 11 position players available tonight. But the sky's not falling. It's not. You get a scholarship, whatever shape or form it is, to go to LSU, you're pretty good. And I can promise you, Tony Robichaud's not having 1 ounce of sympathy for LSU. So this is a big game for both clubs. Very good rivalry, very well-contested rivalry, and we'll see. Looking forward to talking to Wally Pontiff Sr. here in about 13 minutes. Looking forward to that. We are presented by Hooters. Hooters just makes you happy. The brand new, completely renovated store on Ambassador Caffrey Parkway. It's a great opportunity to go to get some great food, the nicest girls around, and televisions everywhere. If it's on in the world of sports, they'll have it on at Hooters. So you've got the LSU baseball game tonight on CST. You've got NBA playoff games on. You've got NHL playoff games on. They're there. Go enjoy it. But when you're in the car getting there and leaving, be sure you turn it to 103.7 The Game to listen to the call of the game. So we've got that. Also, tomorrow, and it's a pretty big to-do on the NFL Network, we'll know who the Saints will be playing and when. The 2019 regular season schedule will be released tomorrow, 7 p.m., on the NFL Network. Now, the opponents have already been determined, and that was determined at the end of the 2018 regular season. Just don't know when they play, when the bye week is. But the NFL rotation brings the NFC West and the AFC South to the Mercedes-Benz Superdome. So we'll get to see the Arizona Cardinals. Will they have Kyler Murray as the quarterback, or will it be Josh Rosen? We'll get to see the San Francisco 49ers, J.J. Watt and the Houston Texans, and Andrew Luck and the Indianapolis Colts come to town. All right. The Saints will travel to Seattle, and they will play the L.A. Rams from the NFC West. Now, because of their first-place finish in the NFC South, the Saints will host the NFC East champion Dallas Cowboys, and then they'll travel to the NFC champion of the North, the Chicago Bears. So let's play Chicago at Soldier Field early in the season, not late. Not late, right? Want to play them early. Stay away from those heavy-duty cold winds coming off of one of the Great Lakes right there, butting up against Soldier Field. So the dates and the times will be announced on Wednesday. The league previously announced that the Green Bay Packers and the Chicago Bears will kick off the regular season. Don't expect, and you got to temper, look, 2017 was the most unbelievable draft that the Saints could ever have imagined. Kamara, Lattimore, Ramchek, all those guys. They had lots of opportunities because they would come off of 7-9 seasons. Okay? Last year, you know, you didn't get that much, but there wasn't really that much of an opportunity because the Saints were really good. So, yeah, Marcus Davenport, until he got hurt, was finding his way, making his mark. Traquan Smith, as a wide receiver, got in about a little over 50% of the action. So he was a good pick. They held significant roles. The team finished 13-3. They were one bad call from advancing to the Super Bowl. But don't expect much out of this upcoming class because, you know, the Saints really are in an enviable situation in a lot of ways. Yeah, it's good to have high picks to build a team for the future. But in 2019, the Saints already have a roster ready to contend for a Super Bowl. And that means there are fewer roles available for rookies to fill. So matching last year's success is easier said than done. You know, it's tough to predict injuries. It's tough to predict regression. But it's easier to expect veterans to continue to play well than to count on rookies to adjust to the NFL, I think. So, you know, think back to that class. Lattimore, Kamara, Ramchek, Marcus Williams, Alex Anzalone, Trey Hendrickson, 2017. They all played significant roles. But that team had plenty of holes to fill after finishing 7-9 each of the previous three seasons. So you had rookies filling those holes. You added some key free agents, including right guard Larry Warford, defensive end Alex Okafor, linebacker A.J. Klein, wide receiver Ted Ginn Jr. The Saints improved to 11-5, and they won the division in 2017. And the rookie contributions were incredibly impressive. But, you know, the Saints, look, when you think about it, the Saints have just one pick in the first four rounds. They might trade to add another. But realistically, what starting positions are available for a rookie to earn next season? The Saints basically lost four starters, right, from their 2018 roster. Okafor, running back Mark Ingram, center Max Unger, who retired, as did tight end Benjamin Watson. So you bring in Davenport as a rookie a year ago. He's going to slide into Okafor's spot. Saints signed Latavius Murray out of Minnesota to replace Ingram. Nick Easton to replace Unger. And they bring in Jared Cook from Oakland to replace Watson. One spot where a second-round pick could make the most impact as a rookie, I think, and it's a position I think they need, is at wide receiver. You've got Michael Thomas. He's a given. Ted Ginn Jr., Tre'Quan Smith, Cam Meredith, Keith Kirkwood. Thomas is the only player in that group guaranteed to have a huge role next season. But all those other ones have experience, and that could keep a rookie on the bench. But they could certainly use that. They could use depth at defensive end, at safety, and along the offensive line, as always. As always. So draft picks are going to have their chance. Injuries inevitably mount up, but they're going to have to wait for an opportunity. So don't expect too much overall. They have the 62nd overall pick. Then they have the 168th, 177th, 202nd, 231st, 244th. We'll see. We'll see. Timeout. The Shrine on Airline, the Wally Pontiff Jr. Classic, 16th edition. We'll talk to Wally Pontiff Sr. next.
The Blonde Bomber is back and better than ever as you are locked into the Jordy Hultberg Show on 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com, and on the app.
And we welcome you back. Tonight continues a tradition. Each and every year, LSU travels down to New Orleans to the Shrine on Airline to take on an in-state opponent for the fifth, I think, consecutive year, maybe more. It's the UL Raging Cajuns. First pitch at 7 p.m. It is the Wally Pontiff Jr. Classic. With so many proceeds, one, providing a scholarship for LSU baseball and helping so many other factors to contribute to great causes around the community, we are thrilled to have Wally Pontiff Sr. on today. And Mr. Pontiff, thank you so much for your time, my friend. How are you?
I'm great, Jody. Thank you for having us, my man. I'm blessed. Everything's a good day for me.
I was going to ask you, is this a happy, joyous day for you, or does this, I can't imagine, does this conjure up so many other types of memories?
Well, it brings a lot of things back and a lot of memories. You know, I don't want to say it's bitter, but it's a sweet day. We do have our memories, and, you know, it's beautiful to know that people still come and still remember Wally and the dream he had of giving back to the community. So in a way, it touches our hearts, but we're happy that we're helping others.
That's awesome. That is, you know, he's the only, I got to be honest with you, Wally, now, he's the only Jesuit Blue Jay I ever really grew to like and to really care about. You know, we De La Salle Cavaliers, we don't care much about the Blue Jays.
You Cavs, I can understand. That's right. That's right. Well, it's a funny little story, and I know everyone. My brother, who's his godfather, when Wally went to Jesuit, said the only time he would wear a Jesuit hat is when you start on the varsity. And so he got the start of the freshman. He bought him a hat in the bookstore and he wore it. So I know where you're coming from.
That's awesome. Why did your son want to go to LSU?
Well, you know, he wanted to, first of all, he was very interested, number one, is the education area of, yeah. of being a doctor. He wants to be a doctor. And when we had scholars from Tulane and a few other schools, and LSU, when he talked to Skip Berkman, he knew he was at the right place, being a student athlete and being with the man that he respected the most. And I don't know if we could have picked a better place. All three of our children loved it, and they have been just tremendous to us and our family. And we're Tigers. We're Tigers.
I love it. I love it. Such an outstanding. You've got to be so proud of the young man that God took so soon. But all the things that he did as a ball player, and that's secondary. But as a leader of his ball club, and that so many people just absolutely loved to be around. You talk about, you know, and it's not fake, because not a single teammate that I've ever talked to had anything negative to say. Everything was always positive. Yeah, and that's got to make your heart just warm up.
Hey, we're very special. He was very special. He was a very humble young man. And, you know, Joe, it's funny, when he was in class, he would not tell anybody he played baseball. He just went to school and studied. Uh-huh. And, you know, so I wanted him to understand that it's bigger than the baseball game. It's the people you deal with. And I'm really proud, because it really is nice to hear that. And you know what? Wow. We lost our son, but we gained the community. We really did.
You did. You did. You had you got a whole big extended family now, man. And that's that's awesome. And number 31 will never, ever, ever be forgotten, and will always live on. You talked about Skip Berkman and how influential he was. Any other stories like that?
He was just, you know, Wally one day said, "Dad, I really believe the man could be the president of the United States." That's how much respect Wally had. Looked for him as a father figure, as a mentor. Just brilliant, his vocabulary, his way he approached things. And Wally just fed off of that. And he couldn't have been with a better man. I mean, he just idolized the man. And whatever the man said, he knew he had done research on it and worked at it. And, you know, he's a special guy. Well, a guy won 5 national championships, a legend, you know. And I really believe, you know this, he put LSU back on the map.
No question. He's on the Mount Rushmore of LSU athletics for here and forever. No question about that. Wally Pontiff, Sr., kind enough to join us. Talk about the foundation and what your original goal was, and how you far exceeded those expectations.
Well, it was something that my buddies at work said, well, let's start a little golf tournament, a little foundation. Started that way, and then Skip said, I want to do a game in New Orleans in honor of Wally. And since then, and we didn't know what to do. We just jumped in with both feet.
Sure.
And really, people helped us. And now it's grown to be such a beautiful thing. We've touched a lot of places that we've been able to get money to, you know, Hall of Fame, a room at LSU, St. Jude's Hospital, the Son of a Saint, Pause for Veterans. I mean, you talk about, you know, all of the things, the Miracle League, Andy's Angels, Jesuit, Pontiff Park. I mean, it goes on. And what we do, you know, we have no specific, other than what Wally wanted to do, was that give back to the community if he made it big as a doctor or in the big leagues. And that's what we did. So we have a board, we take names from everybody, we put it in, and we pick out 10 people that we can send checks to. We don't tell them it's coming, we just put it in the mail.
That is awesome. And what is Christmas comes whenever, right? I mean, my goodness.
And that's been beautiful, because we've got letters back. They were shocked, you know. So we didn't know recognition. We just wanted to make sure we were touching people.
Your poor son died of a genetic heart disease caused by the thickening of a heart muscle. No cure for this disease. I can't fathom what you and your lovely wife had to go through. I can't fathom.
Yes, I don't want you to, because you know you have children and you love your children and you never want to see them go before you. But, you know, we always thought when we had him, he was a gift to God, because he was no trouble. He made it easy for us and all. But, you know, he had what is called a dysrhythmia, one beat of the heart. And it just happened to not beat that night. And we've taken this thing and checked everything. It's just one of these things that you'll never see ever. Hopefully I'll never see another one.
Right.
A child go through that. The one of the things I will say that, and I tell it to people, there shouldn't be a day or a night that you don't call your mom, dad, your children, tell them you love them. There's no guarantee tomorrow. And if we can send that message to make sure, I don't care, just hug your children. Let them know you love them. Yeah. And everybody has little problems, little bumps, but guess what? It's still their children, you know? And it knocked us for a loop.
Yeah, I'm trying to be a professional here, but I'm thinking of my children and I'm thinking of my parents. And of course, I lost my mom, and my dad is up in his 90s.
Right.
And when we're done with this, I'm definitely going to give him a call and tell him how much he means to me. Well,
thank you, Jody, and that's what I want you to do for your children. Because I remember you as a player, a great player, and went on to LSU and all. I mean, but there's no time that we should forget how lucky we are to have a family.
Yeah. Let's have some fun. Let's talk about the game tonight.
Okay.
I sent Paul a text message. Said, "Look, man, I know you're banged up and injured, but still believe in you. Just hang in there, and you're going to finish this thing strong." So I would expect a great crowd. The Raging Cajuns always bring a lot. They love the Crescent City, man. They love it.
They've been great. Coach Robichaux and the team are well respected, the way they play the game, the way he built this program. Having LSU and UL play together means a lot to us, the Ponce family, and I think to the community. And it's going to be a nice game tonight. We need to get a win, the Tigers.
Yeah.
So, I just think we had a tough weekend with the cold and all up there, but our kids are going to bounce back. And it's been a wonderful thing with these guys. And next year we're going to have a different new team in here. And that's going to be Tulane.
Okay. That's awesome.
So that's another little rival. So make it pretty good.
That's a good one as well. I was a kid living in the New Orleans area, Metairie area, and all that stuff. Played every sport. I'm sure Wiley did the same growing up. And what gravitated him toward baseball?
Well, I'm a baseball guy. I love basketball, but I was a lefty, so I was a little pitcher. But he loved playing and loved hitting. And when you love to hit, baseball keep you going. If you're a hitter, you got a chance to play. And I think that was it. And he played basketball up to his freshman year, but he wanted to continue on his studies and just play the game of baseball. And I think a lot of people, he was a good hitter when he was a little boy, left-handed hitter, so he said, "I'm just going to work on that," and that's what we did. And when
that's
he went
great.
To the other coaches, I let them coach him. So it was more important for him to find his own niche. I didn't want him to be a baseball player because of me. I wanted him to be a baseball because he
right.
wanted to do it.
But you always had that niche with him, right? I mean, that was the father-son connection out in the backyard, pitch and catch.
Yes.
I mean, those are the greatest memories of all.
That's the best memories in the Little League. And that was funny. One thing you wanted to tell me about Skip Bergman. While he was in Atlanta for the first time, and he went and saw Skip, he said, "Did I do things something wrong?" He said, "No, Wally, son, I'm gonna hit the right-hander. We're facing a big-time left-hander." And he said, "Coach, I can hit left-handers." He said, "Well, how do you come with that, Wally?" He said, "My daddy was left-handed. He threw to me all my life." He said, "You're in the lineup." And he hit a home run that day, by the way.
That's awesome. That is awesome.
It's an advantage when you're lefty-lefty, so you learn how to hit off them, So that's what
that's
he did.
Terrific.
He
that is terrific.
With it. And,
well,
I want these kids to enjoy what they're doing, And one of the things that Wally never, ever saw an LSU game at Box Stadium until he got there his first year. He
really?
Never saw LSU play. He saw him down here, but we were playing on the weekend, so we never got to see it.
Okay.
So
okay.
Now it's different. They bring him in to see the games, But we had a wonderful time. It was the best.
Well, Wally, I can't thank you enough. What a special, special night. And Wallace Victor Sebastian Pontiff Jr. Lives on and always will.
Thank you. Thank you.
Well, God bless you. Enjoy the ball game.
Too, my man.
I look forward to seeing you soon, my friend.
Thank you, my buddy. Appreciate
okay.
it. Bye-bye.
You take care. Take care. Wally Pontiff Sr. Again, LSU and the UL Raging Cajuns. First pitch, 7 o'clock. Pregame show, 6:30, right here on 103.7 The Game, Acadiana's number one sports station and your source in Acadiana for LSU sports. Can't imagine. Hope I never do. We'll be right back.
There's only one place you'll find all of the movers, the shakers, and Tigers newsmakers. And it's right here on the Jordy Holter Show on 103.7 The Game.
All right, welcome back. DC's Little Capital Exxon, I-10 at the Henderson Cecilia exit in lovely Brobridge, home of the legendary Crip Cormier. Yes, yes, legendary. DC's Little Capital Exxon's got everything you need. Everything for your travels. 5 miles, 50 miles, 500 miles, everything. Cleanest restrooms, and you know how significant that is to the ladies in your traveling group. It really is. We care too, but boy, they care, and rightly so, deservedly so. Immaculate. Immaculate. And that true soul food deli tucked away in the corner. Best cheeseburger ever. Ever. Check it out. DC's Little Capital Exxon. No decision yet on the Monday Night Football analyst, but Peyton Manning is going to be doing a 30-episode documentary series coming to ESPN Plus. Boy, they're trying to push that thing. Man, they're trying to push it. And he's going to talk to some of the legendary figures in NFL history. It's called Peyton's Places. That's appropriate, right? He's going to eat crabs in Baltimore with Ray Lewis, ride a vintage Hupmobile vehicle with Jay Leno, discuss Elvis with Elvis Presley's best friend how the King drew up plays for his touch football team. How about that? How about that? He and Joe Namath will rewatch the coaching film from Super Bowl III with the guarantee while they're playing a game of pool. He'll join Mel Kiper Jr. to review Kiper's library of draft guides to explore how the draft guru helped turn a boring business meeting into some great television. And on and on and on. So that should be fascinating. They'll solve the mystery of the immaculate reception. They'll recreate the play with help from Terry Bradshaw, Franco Harris, and others. And this ought to be fun. He'll pop champagne corks with the 1972 Dolphins to commemorate the only perfect season in NFL history. How about that? How about that? That'll be fun. From that to some ridiculous things, like a Texas man was arrested for remotely covering his license plate to avoid paying tolls. Deputies outside of Houston say Preston Cody Talbot was arrested after he failed to pay a toll in Houston last week. Investigators later learned he owned nearly $5,500 in toll fares. So he had the James Bond. Flip the license plate, can't see it anymore, go through the toll, not paying, zoop, gets further down, flips it again, and there he is. Well, they developed a pattern of when he went through this thing, and they finally nailed him. How about that? How about that? Now I've got one for you, and I want you all to think about this, and I want you to all be honest about this one. Okay. The Clippers are playing the Golden State Warriors, so they're staying in San Francisco. And they tied the series after being down 31 last night. They rallied, kept me up really, really late watching it, and they rallied and won it, 135-131. So, between game one and game two, Doc Rivers, the head coach of the Clippers, was walking around the streets of San Francisco. He reached in his pocket to pull out his cell phone, unbeknownst to Doc Rivers. Now, you know, a lot of people don't carry cash. It's all credit card, right? All credit card. Well, Doc Rivers gets paid very, very handsomely to be the head coach of the Clippers, and Steve Ballmer pays him a lot of money. So Doc Rivers had $2,000 in cash in his pocket. So he reaches, pulls out his cell phone, And unbeknownst to Doc, the $2,000 hits the ground. And he just keeps walking. He didn't even know it. All of a sudden, he gets a tap on his back, and it's some guy, and he says, "Hey, man," he's got the money in his hand, "this is your money. You dropped it, and here you go." So this stranger hands the money to him, and Doc is like, "Wow." And then he turns and goes away. And Doc never got to thank him. He never got to maybe give him some cash. But Doc said, "Hey, whoever that was, you could have had free tickets if you hadn't run away." So obviously the stranger wasn't seeking a reward or any accolades for the kind act. But maybe if the series goes back to the city by the bay, he can find Doc Rivers and Doc can go, "Oh, hey, here's your tickets. Here's your tickets." So I guess the question to you is this. Be honest. You're walking around. You see this wad of money fall out of a guy's pocket. Are you gonna keep it? Finders keepers, losers weepers? Or are you gonna give it back to the guy? Now, I gotta be honest with you, I found once a $20 bill. And there were hundreds of people walking around. I just happened to look on the ground, and there it was. And I held it, and I stood still, and I looked around. Was anybody coming back for it? Anybody coming back? Okay, I'm taking it. And that's $20. Now, $2,000, I'll tell you a perfectly true story. Same thing happened to me at a local joint in town called Izzo's. Took my girls there. Reached to pay with a credit card, unbeknownst to me. I had $140 in cash. Now, this is a wild, crazy story. Didn't even know about it. Went through the deal, got the drinks, we ate, went home. I'll go to clean, take my clothes off, jump in the shower. The next day I go, look through my pant pockets and goes, "Where's my money? Did I lose it? What happened?" Didn't even think. Didn't even dawn on me. As God is my witness, I went back a month later with my girls because they love Izzo's. Went back a month later. I'm in line, order, get our food, and the clerk at the cash register goes, "Mr. Jordy," and hands me an envelope. And there was my $140 a month later. Now, how about that? You think I'm going back to that place to bring my kids to get something to eat? You darn tootin'. And I asked who found it. They took me to that person, and I gave her a nice tip. And I said, that is the nicest thing ever. So would you do the same thing? Would you pick it up? Knowing who it belonged to. I think you would. I don't know. Now, if you didn't know, you're looking around, and all of a sudden, there's nobody around, and you see this, and you pick it up, and you're looking around, and you're going, "Whose is it?" Well, Doc Rivers got you $2,000 back. So, best person in sports or whatever, the dude in San Francisco giving him back his $2,000. How about that? And I got my $140 back from Izzo's. What a day. What a day. All right, hour number one's history. Big hour number two coming your way. We'll set the stage after this. Here on the Jordy Helpert Show. On Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com. We'll be right back.
Live from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
Tigers pull off another miracle.
This is Acadiana's sports station, 1037 The Game. Streaming live on the 1037 The Game mobile app and online at 1037thegame.com.
He struck him out, and the Tigers have won.
This is the Jordy Hultberg Show. Get involved and call 337-706-0111. Follow along at 1037 The Game on Facebook and Twitter. And now it's time. Here's your host, Jordy Hultberg.
Hour number two of two, and away we go on this Tuesday, April 16th, the year 2019. Shout outs, just one of many, but Iberia Bank for donating $6,000 to help bring back those burned St. Landry churches. Shout out, Iberia Bank. Well done, well done. We've got LSU baseball versus the Raging Cajuns tonight here on 103.7 The Game. 6:30 pregame. First pitch, 7 o'clock, the Shrine on Airline for the annual Wally Pontiff Jr. Classic. We talked with Wally Pontiff Sr. in hour number one. If you didn't get a hold of it, go to 1037thegame.com and you can find it there. Really touching. Really a good, good man. His son taken way, way, way too soon. We'll talk LSU basketball recruiting with Billy Embody in this hour, and we'll talk with Alex Myers, who was at Augusta. And he was there walking, following, hearing, seeing everything about Tiger Woods. He'll share his experiences and his memories with us in this hour. But we do it every day at this time of day. CD, let's take our daily walk around the sports water cooler. Button, please.
Here's today's Hot Topics, brought to you by Cajun Chef. Spice up your life with Cajun Chef products. Delectably delicious, decidedly better.
All right, CD, let's get busy. What you got today, my friend?
Jordy, we got a lot to get to today, but of course, the biggest topic out of all of them kind of popped in late at night. Then again, I think both of the two biggest topics happened late at night, Jordy. First off, we got to go with Russell Wilson signing with the Seahawks for a monster deal. Reportedly, the best paid player in all the NFL.
Yep.
You got to
yep.
think, man, my goodness, this is ridiculous. Insane amount of money he's going to wind up getting, especially when you look at the guaranteed money that is coming his way. So, Jordy, the question for you right now is he worth all that money?
I guess the Seahawks believe he is, so good for him. What was weird, though, his announcement, middle of the night, in bed with his wife, and they do an Instagram or whatever that thing is that they do. That was weird. A little bit strange to me. But, hey, whatever works, works. I think he's got $65 million up front. And it's a four-year, $140 million average. Is about $35 million a year. Good for Russell Wilson. Here's a guy that came in. He's too small. You know who's happy? Baker Mayfield. Tyler Murray.
Yeah.
All those guys are very, very happy. Yeah.
Oh, trust me. These guys are going to be very, very happy, especially depending on where Kyler Murray kind of winds up landing, because you can about imagine with everything that's going on with the Browns and how much talent they have around Kyler Murray, he's going to be succeeding at a very high level. It's going to be fun to see what happens with that, with kind of the smaller quarterbacks. We could be getting ready for a new era of football, if you will, especially Russell Wilson.
Got to be able to move around, got to be able to get the ball out of your hand quickly.
Yep.
And that's the way it is now. So,
and of course, Jordy, moving over to the NBA, I think the biggest topic out of all of them involving the NBA has to be Boogie Cousins done for the rest of the playoffs with a bad quad injury. How bad of a break is it for Boogie Cousins right now? He literally felt like he was on top of the world, was performing at a very high level, and then in game two of the playoffs, you get taken out for the entire rest of the playoffs with an injury. Yeah.
Early on, first period, torn quad, he's done. Had the Achilles rupture a year ago. Now this, it's just, I feel terrible for the guy. That you know, you carry that excess weight like that, and you're so big, it affects those big men more than anything else. I feel terrible for him. And wake-up call to the Warriors, up 31, and they took their foot off the gas. And is there a better sixth man ever than Lou Williams? I mean, he is a scoring machine. He's unbelievable. So I feel for Boogie, and a wake-up call for the Golden State Warriors, to be sure.
How much do you think that winds up affecting Boogie Cousins' stock in terms of free agency? Because you know he only had a one-year deal, so that winds up hurting him a lot.
He's going to have another one-year deal next year. That's all anybody's going to do. And then if he can get through that season and show that he can play and hold up, then maybe he'll get a long-term lucrative contract. But maybe.
It's just the fact, man. It happens at the worst possible time. We saw it happen towards the end of the season last year. And now this, during the playoffs, that means he's going to be out again probably about 6 months or so. A good chunk of the 2019-2020 season could very well, like I said, it all depends on how surgery goes and how the recovery process goes.
It's nothing like the Achilles. So he'll come back quicker, but you know he's got to get on a diet. He's got to lose some weight. He's carrying too much, and that always affects those players. It just does.
And you know, Jordy, we got to talk about it. I think this is something we can have a lot of fun with about epic collapses, but we're going to stick strictly with the Golden State Warriors because it feels too easy to bring up a 25-point lead in the Super Bowl. But what was the more epic collapse, Jordy? What the Warriors did yesterday with a 31-point lead evaporating, or is it the Warriors blowing that 3-1 series lead in the NBA Finals just a couple years ago?
Oh. 3-1 series lead, blowing that one, no question. I mean, this is only game two. This is a wake-up call. Now, we'll see what happens the rest of the series, but when you're up 3-1 in the finals and you lose that, that's by far much more egregious.
I like that a lot, Jordy. Like I said, 3-1, it's probably the one that's going to get everybody talking. It's one that got everybody thinking that the Warriors were human after all, and then they wound up kind of responding in a big way over the next couple of seasons to really put their stamp on things in terms of being a quote-unquote dynasty, even though it feels like the dynasty just suffered its first hairline fracture. So
They're going to be fine. They're going to be fine. Trust me. They'll be fine.
And, Jordy, you're a big Cardinals fan, so we got to wind up talking about it. Are you just tired of seeing Christian Yelich?
Yelich has got to go. He's got to go. 7 home runs in 5 games. I mean, it's ridiculous. Quit pitching to him. Walk him. Man.
When I saw
that, crazy.
Like this morning when I woke up, I didn't check any of the box scores or anything, but all of a sudden I just see Christian Yelich kind of just start popping up on Twitter and all of the social media. I'm like, oh my God, what did he do now? And I'm like, oh, he played the Cardinals last night and completely
home run. Yeah. Thanks a lot, Yelich. Yeah. Appreciate it.
Yeah, meanwhile, you had welcome back Yasiel Puig last night, and he wound up hitting a home run to start off the ball game last night, and he definitely pimped that one. It was awesome to see.
What do Yasiel Puig and Kramer Robertson have in common?
They've home runned off of them,
Clayton Kershaw. Yeah, that's right. How about that?
I wasn't going to say Kim Mulkey's son. They definitely don't have that in common.
No, oh my God! Kim Mulkey bought herself a new with a championship. She bought herself a new bright yellow Corvette. You ought to see that bad ride.
I can about imagine that one,
big boy.
I'm gonna check that out, Jordy. I can about imagine. That's
so wait a minute,
smooth ride.
I gotta ask you. I told you the Doc Rivers story.
Yeah.
Dropped $2,000 cash out of his pocket. If Clint Domain's walking the streets of San Francisco, looks down and sees that, what do you do?
Again, if I know it's like Doc Rivers, it's like, okay, pick it up and try and figure out a way to give it back to him. And if it's like, if I don't know who the heck it is, and it's in like, let's say hypothetically, you were talking about your story at Izzo's, and it's in an envelope or what have you. I'd probably want to bring it over to the authorities and then let them figure it out. Cause then after, what is it, 30 days or however it is, it's yours.
Okay. There you go.
So like I said, you handle it the right way.
You're an honest man. That's why you're moving up the charts, CD. You're an honest man. I know some of you out there would go, ooh, vacation, beach time, see you later. That wouldn't be the good thing to do, though. That wouldn't be good. All right, there you have it. Well done, CD. Good job. Just don't flip your license plate when you're going through on Ambassador Caffrey Parkway. Just leave your license plate alone, okay? Don't do that. All right, almost 12 minutes after the hour, we'll take a time out here. Of course, Hot Topics brought to you by Cajun Chef Hot Sauce, the very best hot sauce on the planet, because the Biard family, right there in St. Martinville, for nearly 90 years, a family tradition, using only the finest spices and the finest peppers. They put it all together with their secret ingredients, and voila, Cajun Chef Hot Sauce. Bring a small bottle with you wherever you go, because everything tastes better with Cajun Chef Hot Sauce on it. LSU basketball recruit.
Taking the hottest topics and dousing them in gasoline. It's the Jordy Hultberg Show on Acadiana Sports Station. 103.7 The Game.
All right, welcome back. Time to talk some recruiting because basketball recruiting time is here. And now, of course, we all know Sunday night, Will Wade was reinstated as the head basketball coach of LSU, and National Signing Day is here and now. and it's time to get on the road. So nobody knows LSU basketball recruiting better than Billy Embody of Go247 Sports. Billy, I can imagine, I know the assistants have been on the ground doing some work, but I got to imagine that Will Wade is just, he's here, there, and everywhere.
Well, right now it's a dead period until Thursday. But once Thursday hits, they'll be out seeing plenty of guys, and especially checking in on those top targets that we talked about. Guys like four-star wing Lester Kionis and five-star power forward Trendon Watford, guys like that. And then they'll go around and probably start looking at setting up some visits, maybe with some transfers and junior college transfers and things like that. But they do have these couple days before they've really. To kind of plan and get their plan together in terms of who they want to go see, who they want to prioritize in terms of going to visit, things like that for this coming weekend.
So in a dead period, they can start out later this week. When can they sign players?
April 17th is the first day of the late signing period. So that's when, that'll be, I don't think that day specifically. Yeah, I don't think that day specifically will be a big day for them. But we've seen Trendon Watford moved back his decision, which was scheduled for April 20th. Now he's moved that back. There's no timetable for his decision, but probably in the coming weeks, and that's a very, very good thing for LSU. And I feel like they're right in the mix to land him once again now that Will Wade's back. Spoke with his dad, and he said, they were assured by Will Wade that he was in a good spot, and LSU is, behind him and fully reinstated him and all of that. And so they feel good about where Will Wade's status stands going into a critical couple weeks for them in terms of how they decide, Trendon's future.
Billy Embody, Go247 Sports. With the loss of Cabell Bigby Williams for he ran out his eligibility. Now Naz Reid is going into the NBA draft. I would imagine that Watford, all 6'9", 230, is priority number one. You got to get size.
Yeah, and he'd be a huge addition. And if you bring in Watford, and then you have Cortese Cooper coming off his redshirt year, and then you pair them with Emmett Williams and Darius Days, that's a pretty good front line. But I do think they want to get a true rim protector type like Cabell Bigby Williams, and whether that's through a transfer or junior college or however they figure it out, that's also a big priority for them as well.
How do you rate or compare or contrast Trendon Watford and Naz Reid when he was coming out of high school?
Well, I think Naz has more size, one. I mean, he's a true 6'11 type player. I will say Trendon has some similar traits in terms of how he can handle the ball. He can play out on the perimeter, and I think he's a little bit more rugged. He's not as – they're probably similar in terms of athleticism. They don't really jump off the page in terms of their true athleticism. They're not like Emmett Williams or Marlon Taylor. But, Trendon is certainly more probably in the Darius Days type mold, I would say, in terms of a forward. And but he's got a little bit of size. He's thick. He's ready to go. He's got a high basketball IQ. And he's played for one of the best coaches in Alabama over at Mountain Brook, so he's well coached as well, which is good. That's kind of similar to how Darius Days was coming out, and he doesn't have to work on his body that much. I mean, he'll have to get it stronger, of course, which those guys can always do. But it wasn't like Naz where he had to lose 30 pounds and things like that when he got on campus.
All right, Billy Embody, Go247 Sports. We saw a lot of players enter their name into the draft. Doesn't mean they can't come back. Naz has already left. He's up in New Jersey, so he's done. I would imagine Tremont Waters is done as well. But those other three, Skylar Mays and Javonte Smart and Emmett Williams, I got a really good feeling that they're coming back into the fray. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, they're I would say, most likely, barring something crazy, I think all three will return to LSU, especially Skylar, especially Emmett. I think Skylar's obviously doing it. It's his last year. He's got a chance to get a really good feedback from NBA teams. And then Emmett, he's just got work to do. I mean, he's not anywhere near draft ready, even with his athleticism and high motor and things like that. He's just not ready. So he'll need to come back. Obviously, there's questions about Javonte and things like that. with how his year kind of went there at the end. But he's not ready either, and he needs to come back to college, and I think he will in the end.
I agree wholeheartedly. Tell me about Lester Quinones from IMG Academy.
He's somebody that's really jumped up in terms of improving over the course of the last year, and especially since he's been at IMG. He's a 3-and-D type player. He's probably a little, he's probably an inch or two shorter than Marlon Taylor. He's not that long and athletic, but he's strong. He's really, really competitive. That's one thing I love about his game. I mean, I saw him against the number one player in the country in the 2020 class, Josh Green. And he shut him down, and that's over that past summer. That wasn't exactly what Lester was known for. He was more of a sharp shooting guy from three who had size, and you know, it was a high basketball IQ. But his defensive game has just improved so much, and you know, with his size, with how he can shoot the ball. I mean, that's what they need more than anything is a guy that can rip it from beyond the arc. So if you were to get Lester and then add in Andre Hyatt into the fold. I mean, those are two guys that can really, really shoot it from three, and would give LSU a lot.
Yeah. That's what they need. They need some shooters. There's no question about that. We're talking with Bill Ambody of Go247 Sports. Wow. Kind of sum up your feelings on all this. Kind of encapsulate your thoughts on where LSU basketball is now, because I know there are people out there that are negative recruiting, and they're doing this and that. And where do you think LSU is right here, right now?
I think they're a team that's certainly at a crossroads, especially with how they finish out the 2019 class and what they add to the 2019 roster. But make no mistake, if they get the three guys that have entered their names into the draft to come back, I mean, it's still a very, very good basketball team and coached by one of the, I mean, better young coaches in the country, and just, as we've seen, one of the better coaches in the country in terms of true X's and O's, player development and all that. And the staff has done a really good job of player development and getting these guys to a point where they could win a regular season SEC championship. So I think they have to finish out with a couple of key guys that could contribute at a really high level. Watford would probably be one of them. Quinones would get plenty of burn as a shooter. But they're going to have to land a difference maker as a transfer in all likelihood to shore things up, especially in the front court, if they're going to want to make a serious run at winning back-to-back SEC titles. But, I mean, a program that is going to deal with a lot of negative attention, which it has, and done it fairly well, I guess, over the last year or so. But, I mean, as long as Will Wade's the head coach, this thing's, I think it's going to you'll start to see some of that that negativity, as long as nothing else, you know, comes out, I guess, fade away and just get back to basketball.
Yeah, let's get back to basketball. I'm old school. I know you lose Cavell Bigby-Williams. I think all these guys would have done a service to themselves to stay one more year. And if all that group stayed together one more year, man, you got a chance to make a run for a national championship. And that's what's so hard to put up with. But I understand, until you walk in somebody's shoes, you can't fault anyone. Is there a particular transfer or transfers out there that could really help this club that you know of?
Transfers? I think anybody, you know, in the front court that's played major minutes and contributed at a high level, I mean, I mean, that I'm sure they'll at least reach out to is Virginia Tech's Kerry Blackshear, who just entered into the transfer portal. And, I mean, all signs are pointing that he'll end up at Texas A&M with Buzz Williams, but you never know. And I mean, he's one of the best big men in that conference, and one that, you know, with him being out there, that would be big time without a doubt. You know, that's just one that kind of jumps out at
me.
But to be honest, this transfer game can just kind of be so, you know, weird and quiet, and all of a sudden, you know, there's a transfer announcing that he's going to LSU or going wherever. So we'll see.
You mentioned A&M. Of course, the other factor, Tony Benford, apparently, you know, connected to Buzz from years past at Marquette. Any more word on that? Benford said he hadn't talked to him, but last time he made an official statement. Have you heard anything other?
No, haven't really. I think that's something that's probably being worked out, you know, with Will being, you know, reinstated right away. I think both him and Tony will, you know, sit down, have a conversation, try and figure things out. Because at this point, I'm sure Buzz Williams has reached out to Tony Benford to kind of gauge his interest in it. And, you know, I think all signs when you talk to coaches around the coaches community, it does point to him going, but it's been so quiet, you just don't know at this point. But I will say this, I would be surprised if I'm, you know, middle of next week, there's not something more definitive, because that's the first live evaluation period. And so that's a chance for these coaches to get out. It's one thing when they're kind of doing in-homes and things like that, but you want your staff together and ready to rock when you're having to go evaluate players in person.
Makes perfect sense. Billy, always appreciate your expertise, my friend. We'll see what happens, but they'll be able to get on the road soon. National Signing Day starts Wednesday, the 17th, and we'll see what LSU does in the days and weeks ahead. Thank you, my friend, as always.
Anytime. Thanks for having me.
Okay, bud. Take care. Billy Embody, go to 47 Sports. What was it like being on the course when the roar of Tiger returned? We'll tell you next.
Your NBC Sports Radio update starts now.
NHL postseason continuing tonight on CNBC and NBCSN. Tampa Bay is at Columbus. Blue Jackets up 3-0. The Islanders look to finish off the Pittsburgh Penguins. New York up 3-0.
It was a Sunday to remember for sure. Tiger Woods winning his 5th green jacket at Augusta, his 15th major championship. We got Alex Myers from Golf Digest on prior to the tournament. He was traveling all day yesterday, but we're fortunate enough he was there, and we're fortunate enough to get him today to share his thoughts and his experiences that he witnessed in those 4 days. Alex, I got to believe you're still kind of on cloud nine, man. Thanks for the time. How you doing?
Yeah, I think everyone is, maybe not everyone, but most people at least, even in the golf industry. I mean, you know, a Tiger win was huge for everyone. And to the way it happened, the way it unfolded, obviously his entire backstory of the whole comeback and everything else just added up to make, you know, one of the great stories in sports history. So, yeah, I'm doing great. I mean, it's still kind of sinking in. We're still trying to put words and you know, to what happened and wrap our minds around what happened. It was really that incredible.
I have never, and we've talked about this before, I've never seen an athlete or a person fall farther from grace than Tiger Woods did, and to then elevate himself to even more popular and more revered than ever before. It's the most remarkable turnaround of anything I've ever witnessed.
Yeah, and you know, it's funny because everybody wants to compare it to Ben Hogan and this and that. And certainly, you know, Ben Hogan surviving a crash with a Greyhound bus was incredible enough, but to come back and win all the majors he did was amazing. But yeah, he didn't ever fall from grace, like you said. It was, he had the physical ailments, obviously, which Tiger has, you know, with the four back surgeries just in the last 4 years. But then, yeah, the mental toll that all these things took on him. Now, again, a lot of it was self-inflicted, obviously, with the scandal and everything else, but still, he did have a tremendous fall from grace. I mean, we can only imagine what that's like for someone to be on top of the world, and then the next thing, you know, 3 weeks in a row, you're on the back page of the New York Post getting blasted for a sex scandal. I mean, you know, so all those things factor in as well. So, you know, it wasn't just the physical injuries. It was definitely the mental toll that going this long without winning takes on you as well. You know, can you even do it under pressure again? You know, we saw him come close a couple times last year in the majors. Of course, he did win the tour championship to end the year, which gave him some more confidence. But yeah, to put it all together, to come all the way back from being ranked 1199th in the world just less than 2 years ago to now he's on his way back to number one, maybe, it's truly remarkable.
even the most ardent of Tiger fans said, okay, well, he's off to a good start, and okay, right. Friday he's there, but when's it going to happen? When is he going to have that bad right. round to knock him out of contention? He never did.
No, he never did, but you're right. And even Saturday and Sunday, he was one over through five holes both days. So at that point you're thinking, man, he's not making the move he needs to make, because especially on Saturday, obviously, with all those low scores, you needed to make a move. And, you know, fortunately by that sixth hole, he made a long one, one of his longest putts of the week, and that kind of got him going. And, mm-hmm. You know, that's what was so interesting about this win. He never really seemed in control of the tournament or even of all facets of his game until those last seven holes, I'd say. Uh-huh. I know he bogeyed 18, but, you know, he knew he had a two-shot cushion. He was playing extra carefully there. But it was just, he really won this tournament with his mind. I mean, he hung in there mm-hmm. as well as he could. He, you know, his most spectacular birdie of the week came on a recovery shot from the trees when, the security guard slipped and almost took yeah. his legs out. I mean, he just battled and battled, hung in there, and finally, when everyone else couldn't hang in the battle, he took over and seized control. And it was kind of a vintage. I know he's never come back to win a major before, technically, in the final round, but it did seem kind of vintage Tiger Woods in that, you know, he kind of waited till everybody else kind of fell off, and then he seized control and held on at the end.
First time he's won a major when he did not lead after 54 holes. Right. And I think the experience of being there and knowing where to hit the shot on number 12, classic example. But
yep.
Did you sense a – because back when he was the most dominant individual in any sport in the history of the world, there was that Tiger factor, and he intimidated people. Mm. Did that even pop up, you think, at all on the final round?
Well, you know, it's so interesting, and, that's obviously tough to ever quantify. But – and I was thinking this on Saturday night, and I wrote something about it. Because of – the bad forecast, obviously everyone knows they moved the tee times way up, but the biggest thing was they changed to threesomes. And that's the only reason why Tiger was in that final group. I have to think that made a big difference. Maybe not from the get-go, but eventually mm-hmm. coming down the stretch, both Finau and Francesco Molinari, who looked, completely unflappable until that back nine, he finally fell to the pressure. Now, it might not have been that he was playing with Tiger. It might just have been that he had the lead at the Masters on the Sunday. Of course, that's a lot of pressure for anyone. But I think especially from Tiger's point of view, he wanted to be in that final group. And again, if they were just in twosomes, it would have been Molinari and Finau and not Tiger. So I think that did play a part. And, it was part of the reason that just seemed like everything lined up for Tiger this week for this to happen.
Alex Myers, Golf Digest, kind enough to join us. And did you get a sense? Because I found myself, and I have nothing against Molinari or any of those golfers. They're all tremendous.
Right.
But I'm going, hit it in the water. When he hit it in the water, I'm like, yes, yes. Did you get a sense of that around the grounds?
Yeah, I did, actually. And actually, my colleague Joel Peel wrote a good piece about that and kind of sympathizing for Molinari. Even John Hamm, the actor, was out there wearing Masters gear, rooting against this guy. And, at Augusta, they weren't overtly doing it until, you did hear some cheers when his ball went in the water. It's not like they're booing him or trying to mess him up on the shot. I mean, especially at Augusta National, the crowd, the patrons, I should say, are so well-behaved. But they just couldn't help themselves. And you can't blame them. I mean, I think even Molinari realized that, this was history and people wanted to see history happen. And, he kind of got in the way of that last year at Carnoustie at the British Open. So at least he can say he kind of foiled Tiger once and then he got his major. And certainly he wanted to win this as much as anybody. But, he was definitely the guy that the people were pulling against. I mean, Finau is a tremendously popular player. I mean, I think people were secretly hoping he would falter a little too as well. Even Brooks Koepka, even Dustin Johnson, these other guys who made runs at Tiger down the stretch, but just came up a little short. I think that the fans, if they're being honest with themselves, they were secretly kind of rooting against more people than they're used to rooting against, because they just wanted to see this happen so badly.
They talk about the roar of the crowd, and then they talk about the Tiger Roar. You were there. Can you describe that?
It's hard to describe. The best way to put it was when I went out there to try to see the 18th hole or the 17th and 18th hole, and you couldn't even get down to the tee at 18. I mean, it was so packed, and you couldn't see anything. The only thing that people could see, other than if you were lucky and were in maybe, I don't know, the first 10 rows of people, was the scoreboard, the giant scoreboard. The loudest roar I've ever heard at Augusta was when they changed Tiger's score from 17. And he just made a par. It's not like he made a birdie or anything. Uh-huh. But they flipped the board, and it said 14 under still. And everyone knew he still had that two-shot lead now with one hole to play, and that it was, 99% in the bag. And the place went nuts. And, people are high-fiving and hugging each other and crying and laughing and screaming. It was amazing. And then I heard a slightly larger roar, obviously, a few minutes later when I'd kind of gone back towards the clubhouse because I couldn't see anything, when obviously he tapped in. And, imagine if he had just made a longer putt, how much louder it would have been. But he tapped in, and it was just a steady roar that picked up, and it kind of moved as he walked through that line of people back to where he was going to sign his scorecard. I'll never forget it. I mean, I'm getting goosebumps just thinking about it. It was so cool.
He's a softer Tiger, isn't he? He's yes. More fan friendly, and I would imagine more media friendly now.
Yeah, a little more. It's not like he's hanging around after his press conferences and chumming it up with people. But I think he tries to give better answers now. I think he smiles a lot more in press conferences. I think he, is more willing to go deeper into answers. To put up with bad questions, uh-huh. as we all give him at some point. I think he's more willing to do all those things. And, the way he carries himself, certainly around the other players and with fans. I mean, I saw him fist bumping a few fans on his way off the driving range on Sunday morning. I mean, in his prime, there is no way he would have even looked at anybody
exactly.
on his way to that first tee. I mean, never in a million years. And, so we're definitely seeing a softer side of him, and that's why some people are rooting for him even harder than ever before. And mm-hmm. and even some of the people who never have rooted for him or rooted against him, and there aren't that many people like that, but it seems like they were even pulling for him to pull this off this time. I mean, they realized just how much he'd gone through. And, and I got to tell you, on Wednesday mm-hmm. night, he mm-hmm. got the Ben Hogan Award from the Golf Writers for overcoming a physical, setback or what have you, and he accepted the award. And usually, I've never been at one of these dinners where Tiger showed up, but he used to come for the Player of the Year award, and he would show up and just say basically thank you and walk out. Now, he did leave early, which is fine because, of course, he had a tee time the next morning, but he gave a 5-minute speech that everyone in the room was so impressed by. And it wasn't just the way he spoke, but just how gracious he was, how humble he sounded, how honest he was. He talked about saying he was done at the Champions Dinner 2 years ago. He said that night he flew to England to have a consultation on his back. I mean, things that he had never opened up about before. He said how appreciative he was of all the writers for writing the kind words about him. I mean, just stuff you'd never heard from before. And, kind of set the tone for a magical week in a way.
Alex Myers, Golf Digest, you are in the golf business. You have a pulse of what does this weekend mean? What does this do for the game of golf?
Well, it's so big because obviously now going into the next major, which is, by the way, the PGA Championship,
yes.
is another big winner in all this because they moved to May. Now they're part of, can Tiger, win two in a row? Can mm-hmm. he make a run at the calendar Grand Slam? There's going to be a lot more hype for that event. It's going to be New York, too, which is going to be crazy. And then you go past that. Now we're talking again about Nicklaus's record of 18. Uh-huh. Now we have another storyline that used to be, part of the built-in narrative to any golf tournament that had finally gone away when people said, all right, let's just see if he can even get through four rounds again healthy. Now at every major, it's going to be, well, can he catch the jack and this and that. Who knows if he will. Obviously, a lot depends on his health and everything else, but at least it's another really interesting storyline that we're, you know, to watch out for. Same as when Phil goes to the U.S. Open, can he win the U.S. Open? Same as when Rory goes back to the Masters, can he complete the career Grand Slam? It's just nice to have another one of these big storylines. And obviously, Tiger breaking Jack's record is bigger than any storyline. So, you know, before this happened, I don't know how much legitimacy we could give to that, but now we have that, and it's definitely creating a lot more excitement.
Absolutely amazing. We were all struck, and kudos to CBS with the split screen of Tiger and his father, Earl, and then Tiger hugging his son. That was remarkable. But really what struck me is as he is walking toward Butler Cabin, past champions, current tour members, all there looking at him and wanting to shake his hand and give him a hug. And you never see that in an individual sport, do you?
No, not, I mean, you know, maybe, you know, I think we've seen in recent years some of these guys, they have circles of friends where, you know, the Bubba Watsons and the Ricky Fowlers and the Justin Thomases and Jordan Spieth, those guys, they kind of do that commingle around. But you're right, this was such an eclectic bunch. Now, again, you know, a lot of them are tied through the fact that they've won a green jacket, but you had, you know, Trevor Immelman out there and Bernhard Langer, who's 61 years old, and then you did have some of these younger guys. And, you know, even Ian Poulter, who, you know, Tiger and Ian Poulter have never exactly been best friends. And they played together, though, on Saturday, and Ian Poulter waited around. He wanted to say hi to him. And it was just an incredible scene. And, you know, you hear even more. I've read so much about this win because you just can't read enough or get enough of it. But even more, there's other guys in the locker room, like Henrik Stenson and Kevin Na. I mean, they're watching the TVs, and they're so into it, and they're rooting for Tiger to win. Because, you know, they all know how big a deal this is for golf in general, and how it gets a spotlight on them and brings more endorsement dollars and everything else.
Yes.
I mean, they all know what Tiger has done. So, yeah, it was definitely, even though we have seen some of that before, and even, you know, Tiger last year at the PGA waited and congratulated Brooks Koepka, and now Brooks Koepka did it the same for Tiger. But nothing quite like this, I agree. It was a nice collection of players.
In the grand scheme, you've been to major tournaments all over the world. Where does this Masters rank in your book?
It's number one in my book by far. It's not even close. I mean, it's incredible. Wow. First of all, Tiger winning, of course, triumphs everything, but it was a great tournament, too.
I mean, you look at
the leaderboard, right?
Oh, my goodness.
I mean, you had seven guys with about an hour left who could have won that thing, and even Tiger talked about it after. You had five guys tied for the lead with just a few holes left, and it wasn't just anyone. I mean, it was a who's who of the top ten. I mean, it was superstars left and right. It's just about the only name that wasn't up there was Rory McIlroy. It just about everybody else was in the mix.
Yeah.
You know, obviously the fact that it's at Augusta, at the Masters, which, you know, let's be honest, has clearly kind of separated itself from the rest of the majors in terms of prestige and excitement. So I think it's number one. I mean, you know, and I don't feel bad at all saying that. I just saw Ian O'Connor from ESPN, and he ranked his top five sporting events he's ever been to, and he's been to Super Bowls and everything else, and he was in there in 97. He had this number one over everything. He had number two was Duke Kentucky in 92, the famous
Leitner shot.
So this was his number one, and he's seen way more sporting events across different sports than I've seen, and he's still ranking this number one against all of those things. So that just puts it into perspective how, you know, this was a historic day. There's no way getting around it.
We woke up
thinking we might see history, and we saw it.
I loved every second of it. All right, so we've got three more majors. He's won in his past time at two of the courses.
Mm-hmm.
Of the three remaining, which one do you think, if he stays healthy, gives him the best opportunity to get another one?
Well, I actually, before the year started, predicted him to win the PGA Championship at Bethpage. I think that would I liked that course for him. I liked that he can kind of pick it apart with not as many drivers and kind of, you know, rely on his iron play there. So if that does come true, that would obviously, the hype machine would crank up to exponential levels if he wins the first two majors. You know, Pebble, you know, obviously what he did, he won by 15 shots back in 2000, but there's so much variance there and variables with the weather and how the USGA sets up the course. And then the same thing kind of at Royal Portrush at the Open Championship where none of these guys, except for Rory McIlroy, who grew up there, really know that course at all. So I think Bethpage really is the one. The one thing that worries me a little, and, you know, like I woke up today and it's kind of freezing still here in New York. I know we've got a few weeks, but I think he'd like that weather to get a little warmer for that back, for, you know, maybe help him warm up a little before the rounds, a little easier. So that'll be interesting to keep an eye on the weather that week. But in terms of, you know, momentum and everything else, you know, he's the favorite to win, and I don't see why he shouldn't be.
You're the best, Alex. Thanks for sharing some stories with us. That's awesome, man. And we'll talk to you soon, buddy. Thank you so much.
You got it, Jordy. Thanks for having me on, man. Take care.
All right, take care. Alex Myers, Golf Digest. Back to wrap it up next. All right, we welcome you back. Finishing touches. Let's get right to our daily history lesson. It was on this day, April 16th, the year 2000. The New England Patriots drafted this guy named Tom Brady with the 199th overall pick in the sixth round. A decision that paid off quite handsomely. A sixth round pick. He's now got six Super Bowl rings. Wow, what a coup by the New England Patriots on this day, April 16th, the year 2000. If today is your birthday, April 16th, happy birthday from all of us at 103.7 The Game and everyone under the umbrella at Delta Media. We wish you nothing but the best. You share the day with, well, a 19-time NBA All-Star, a six-time NBA MVP, a six-time NBA champion, a two-time NBA Finals MVP, and the all-time leading scorer in the NBA. Happy 72nd birthday to Mr. Skyhook, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Nobody gives him much attention when they list the all-time greatest players. How can you leave him off of it? If it's your anniversary, happy, happy anniversary. Hope you keep adding year after year after year to it. Don't forget the Wally Pontiff Jr. Classic, the Raging Cajuns and the Tigers meet on the Shrine at Airline. Yes, indeed. Pre-game show 6:30, first pitch 7 o'clock. We'll recap it all tomorrow, plus another night of NBA playoffs. CD, thanks so much for all you do. Thanks to you for listening. Thanks to our partners that make it possible each and every day. Until tomorrow, I'm Jordy Helpert. Stay thirsty, my friends. Stay thirsty.